This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. Everyone has experienced it, especially at supper time. Robocalls from telemarketers, political candidates, and scammers. Technology is helping these callers mask their number with 513 or 859 area codes, disguising the origin of the call and tempting you to pick up the phone. That innovation is called spoofing. If you do pick up a call, what are the signals that a person on the other end is out to scam you? And what do you do? Are there ways to block these types of calls? To answer those and other questions, we are joined today by the director of the East Central Region of the Federal Trade Commission, John Miller Steiger. One responsibility of the Federal Trade Commission is consumer protection, with a broad mandate to protect consumers from unfair, deceptive, and fraudulent practices in the marketplace. This includes enforcing the telemarketing sales rule. And then we're also joined by police specialist Lori Kramer with the Financial Crime Squad of the Cincinnati Police Department. Her duties include investigating everything from bank robberies, embezzlement, to a variety of different kinds of scams. And Better Business Bureau of Cincinnati Community Outreach Specialist Sandra Guile. If you want to join our conversation, call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@WVXU. You can also catch us on Twitter and Facebook. Welcome, everyone, to Cincinnati Edition today. And glad to have you here. And let's just start. Sandra, what is spoofing? What do we mean by this term? And sometimes it's referred to as neighbor spoofing. And I've even seen smishing as another alternative to this. But what are we talking about here?
Spoofing is not something you say, but I accidentally spoofed something or actually goofed on something. It's when a caller intentionally falsifies the number displayed on your caller ID. Caller ID is a great tool, don't get me wrong, because then you can see who is actually calling you. But they use it, scammers are using it to disguise their identity. And by doing this, the caller can then target certain area codes. That's where you get neighbor spoofing. So say, for example, your cell phone rings. You look down at the caller ID. It's the same area code and the first three digits of your cell phone, but it's the completely last four digits that kind of throws you off.
So they can mimic the first three digits of the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I knew the area code was possible.
Right.
That explains a lot.
It does. And then you go, well, maybe it was somebody nearby. Maybe it's a friend I know. They got a new cell phone number. And then you want to, you know, pick up the phone and figure out who it is. Well, all you're basically doing is verifying where that number came from. Smishing is not something you do with your spouse. You smish them, you kiss them all the time, but you're not necessarily smishing them. Smishing is actually a form of text messaging. And the text message is in a very urgent tone. We need to confirm your account. We need to confirm your password for an online streaming account or maybe your banking information. So they're asking you to take some kind of action, click on a link, reply to this message or something like that. And you're kind of questioning yourself, did I pay a bill? Did I miss something? And you kind of are inclined to respond to that text message from a completely random number that you don't recognize.
Okay. Lori, is the whole spoofing thing, it seems relatively recent, and is it like exploding the number of calls that are being made from robocallers?
In my experience, it's increased. I don't know how recent it is. I think it's been around for a while, but it's definitely increased. And the number of calls I personally get on my cell phone, it can be multiple in a day. And she's correct. It is typically the first six digits of your number. And I know automatically now that is a spoof call, and I don't answer those.
If it doesn't show the name of the person who's already in your contacts list.
Correct. I don't think I even have a friend that has the first three digits of my number that matches.
Oh, that's a good point.
So I do know when it's 513 and then the first three of mine, that it's likely going to be a scam call.
I have to tell you that I got a call this morning exactly like that. It used to be, I thought it used to be, if you had a cell phone, you were pretty safe, that it was mostly on your landlines. But, you know, it's increasingly been on cell phones as well. And, John, let me ask you a question. You're with the Federal Trade Commission. Is spoofing what we're talking about here primarily, and smishing is a cousin related, but spoofing, is this legal or is there anything that government agencies can do about this?
It is, in fact, illegal. And there are steps that we are taking at the Federal Trade Commission and other government agencies as well to try and cut down. You have to, when you're making a call, you have to give accurate phone number information. You can't spoof your phone number on your caller ID. So right there, you know that this is someone who is willing to break the law. And that actually gives some protection, even though it's incredibly annoying how many calls we're getting now of this type. We do know that if you get a call and it's a robocall, that's another thing that's illegal. You should just hang up at that point. We also give the advice, like what Lori does, of just not answering. If it is a legitimate call, people will leave a message, and then you can check that out and see if you want to call them back. As to what we can do, we go into federal court all the time and shut down these operations. A month ago, the Federal Trade Commission shut down two operations responsible for billions. And because I'm calling in, let me make that clear. That's billions with a B. These operations were responsible for billions of calls, and we shut down the operation. The challenge that we have is that it is so technologically easy and cheap for the scammers to use these tools that although we keep bringing cases and we're looking for the best ways to shut down these operations, really we found that one of the most effective things we can do is talk to people like we're doing today.
You know, one of the things, John, I saw on the Federal Trade Commission website was that you recently fined a Miami operation $120 million. And that's that's pretty significant, I think. I mean, that puts a bite into what they're doing.
Absolutely. We are, when we bring a case, we are looking to first and foremost shut down the operation, but then we're also looking to make them feel it.
Okay.
So we will impose civil penalties where we can. If they were taking money from consumers, we try and get as much money as we can back to consumers. But we filed over 130 lawsuits against operations engaged in violating the do not call rules.
Okay. We do have a caller already this morning, or this afternoon. Jimmy has a call with a question. Jimmy, what's your question?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Dan. Thanks for taking my call.
Always happy to hear from you, Jimmy.
Yes, sir. Mr. Hurley, I'm a senior citizen, partially vision impaired. I have a loved one in the hospital. Just went to the hospital. This is a scenario. Now, my question is, that's a comment. My question is, when these robocalls come, do the person that's making the robocall, when I pick up the call, click in to answer the call, are they getting paid for that call they receive?
So is there a value to the person who's in that booth in the call center if a person picks up? You're asking if they answer a call. Does anybody know what the answer to that is? Sandra?
Dan, I can.
John, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I can jump in on that. There are two ways that we found that telemarketers make money on these robocalls. One is if they can get the person to agree to the scam and send in some money. And two is actually just by identifying the phone number as a working telephone number. You know, these days we all know that data can be sold, can be chopped, sliced, and diced, and redirected. And if a company calls you and finds out that you are willing to answer the telephone, well, they can then resell your telephone number to another scammer and say, yes, this is not only a working telephone number, but this is a phone number where someone can answer. And then if you actually will talk to someone, if you, for example, press 1, even though they say it's to get off their list, they're lying. If they call and say that to you, they can, and you're able, and you press 1, they can then take that information and sell it for even more money to other telemarketers. So that's one reason why we tell people don't even engage if you get a robocall. The more they're already breaking the law, the more information you give them, the more calls you're likely to get.
Lori, I see you shaking your head.
It's frustrating, the number of calls that I personally get and the number of calls that in my line of work we take from people every day. And as local law enforcement, we feel a little helpless because a lot of times these people are out of the country and there's not a lot we can do. And I think one of the things I wanted to ask John was what do we tell people as local law enforcement when they call and say, well, I keep getting these calls, or what do I personally do myself with all the calls that I get on my phone? How do I report those to the FTC so they can then take action? Because as a local law enforcement officer, like I said, sometimes our hands are tied with it being out of the country.
So if you've got if you can see the call, you can see the number, but that number has been altered, is it any value, John, to report the number itself because it's been sort of messed with?
Yeah, there. It's an excellent question. There is still value to reporting that, and we do encourage people to report that to us. And you can do that on we have a number of different websites, but you can just go to FTC for Federal Trade Commission.gov. And there's a link there, a button there you can click on in order to report a complaint. And please do, and let us know as much information as you can when you do that about the call, what the phone number was, when it came in. And there are two reasons for that. One is that sometimes we are able to see that there is a large pattern. So even though a phone number isn't actually coming from 513-555-1234, we will notice that there are a bunch of calls from that same phone number, and maybe there's someone who actually dealt with them and sent money to them, and then we can track the money. And we know that they're going to make sure that they get their money. So that's what we do. We follow the money. So that's one reason why it's valuable to report those phone calls, even if they are faked, even if they are spoofed. The other reason is that we publish on our website every phone number that we get a complaint about. And that's important because there are tools that are out there that can make use of that information. They actually can screen calls. So if I report to the Federal Trade Commission that 513-555-1234 called me and it was a robocall, there are apps for your cell phone. There are actually some landline providers that also use programs that can say, all right, I'm going to add 513-555-1234 to my list of numbers that should be blocked. So it does help.
I do that personally on my cell phone, and I advise people to do that as well. It's very easy to block a phone number on at least an iPhone, mm-hmm. I know. And I've probably got 100, if I looked through my phone right now, maybe 100 plus mm-hmm. numbers
blocked. Plus, the added bonus, too, is that Better Business Bureau has a website called scamtracker.org.
Yes.
So people like John can look at our website to see what kind of numbers are coming through and what kind of calls, robocalls are coming through, too, as well.
Lori, what... the Cincinnati Police Department doing proactively in this area with maybe different targeted demographic groups or whatever that to try to help people understand what they can and should do in these situations?
One of the projects that we undertook a couple months ago was targeted towards the elderly and the scams. A lot of the phone calls we get, a lot of the cases we get, unfortunately, are elderly people who have fallen victim to phone calls, emails, you name it. They're vulnerable. They're trusting. So what we decided was we worked with some of the partners in the community who deal with the elderly. We decided to come up with flyers and door hangers that we are getting out in the community through different events, through like Meals on Wheels program. And each one of those door hangers and flyers has information about the common scams that are targeted towards the elderly. That is our short-term plan and what we're doing right now. Long-term, we're going to continue to go to community meetings, try to get the word out. The best thing for us is talking to people and word of mouth.
And Sandra, what about you? What about, the Better Business Bureau have sort of proactive things that you're doing?
Absolutely. We've been out in the community for the last 3 years. We've got a smart consumer program. It covers scams and identity theft and cybersecurity. We go out to a lot of the care facilities, a lot of the senior homes and churches and organizations, and we talk about this topic. And we encourage, I don't call them senior citizens, I call them experienced citizens because they've seen a lot more than I've ever seen.
Thank you. For those of us in that group.
And I get a lot of great stories and a lot of great input, and a lot of them come up to me and they're frustrated. You know, I got one of these phone calls about my grandkid being kidnapped, or I've gotten one of these phone calls about my not paying the IRS. What do I do? And they're frustrated. And I say, I've got a lot of great information from the Federal Trade Commission and from BBB and what to do.
Call about a grandchild being kidnapped.
Yes. Yes. It's the grandparent scam.
Yes.
You haven't gotten one of these, Dan?
No.
Okay. Well, you have younger kids. But it's basically a scare tactic. And they call you and they say, this is law enforcement from Mexico, Tijuana, whatever it is, and your grandchild has been in an accident. I can't get them to the phone right now. They're horribly injured. You need to wire transfer money now in order to get them out of the jail and get care. And they're muffling their voice. They're changing their tone of voice and everything else, convincing you there's a really serious problem. The problem is they maybe can't give you the name of the child, or they can't give you specific information that it actually is your grandchild. Some of these people that I've spoken to in the community have gotten very wise to this, and they'll give out a bogus name or they'll play with them, which really kind of bugs me a little bit because you're just confirming more information. But some of them have fallen and they've gone to the CVSs, the Walgreens, the Walmarts, and have gotten the prepaid debit cards and have lost thousands of dollars to these scammers. The smarter ones who have kind of played along with it have told me some pretty funny stories. The ones who have lost money, it's because they played into the scare tactic. Oh my gosh, there's something wrong with my grandchild. And they gave up the information. Oh yes, you're talking about little Johnny. And it's yeah, Johnny, that's who it is. And they've been in a horrible accident. Now, sometimes these scammers are so smart, and some of our elderly experienced citizens are very tech savvy, and they've got a Facebook page. So they go perusing social media and they'll pull personal pieces of information.
They'll actually have the name sometimes of the child, or they'll call and say they are the child.
Yeah.
And the elderly person will think they're actually speaking to their grandchild. I had one woman call and say, well, he called me granny. And that's, I know that he calls me granny. And so I really thought it was him.
Exactly.
Need to change. You have to have a special name.
Well, and our advice, actually, that's one of the things I was just going to say. Our advice to them is, have a code word with your family so that anybody in your family knows this code word, and they know that if I'm in trouble and I call and give this code word, that it really is me that's calling for help.
Exactly.
Okay. We've got a lot of people calling in right now. I want to start getting
to them. It's a popular topic.
Getting to them. Frank, you have a question.
Yes. I have some outstanding debts, and I get bill collectors calling me daily. Usually the number shows up from Albuquerque, New Mexico, or California, or Florida, or someplace. But if I look in my phone over the past 10 days, I bet you there's 20 calls using my first three digits of my phone number, along with the area code.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that legitimate businesses or bill collectors use spoofing as a way of getting you to answer the phone?
I'll let John handle this one.
Sure. Well, by definition, I guess, if a company is using an incorrect phone number, they are no longer legitimate. So a company that is a legitimate debt collector should not be changing their phone numbers. They need to give you accurate information. And a little bit more, I can tell you, Frank, is that you can tell them that you want to deal with them in writing, and they should stop calling you. And I guess you can see whether those other calls stop, too. I suspect that those are pure scammers, unfortunately, you'll still get them.
Okay. Thank you very much, Frank, for that call. Trillin, we have you've also got a question, and I think it raises questions about responsibility here.
Yeah, I find the topic definitely timely because something I've worked in marketing for a little while, so I understand the need for people to contact them, people to reach out. But I've noticed within the last 3 years, this is what you're calling spoofing. I know, again, same three digits, even sometimes six digits of my own number, and I already assume it's not a number saved in my phone. Don't know the person. I'm somewhat of a millennial, and everyone's already saved in my phone that I like to conduct business with. But my concern, and really more of a question of action, is just how can the phone companies get involved? I already have my number registered on a call list. It doesn't do anything. But I'm assuming those companies or those individuals that are making these phone calls are using some sort of phone service. I wanted to know how can the phone companies get involved, if they are involved, to not only track and identify these people, but also put in place a means for them to prevent these places from enacting these sorts of calls and taking advantage of people.
John, what is the involvement, what is the responsibility of the phone companies?
Well, the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, a different agency, just recently made it easier for phone companies to block calls. So that's great news. And you can do a little bit of shopping around if this is something that's important to you. Different carriers will have different tools that are available to their consumers. And that's true for landlines, and that's true for your cell phone, and that's true for your cell phone carrier, too. So if this is something that's important, ask your carrier. Some of them will provide free of service call screening services or blocking services. Some of them provide it, but it's with a little bit of an extra fee. So there are tools, and the companies are stepping up more. As I said before, we're trying to help them by giving them and giving the public the phone numbers that people are using, and to make it easier to block the calls. One thing, if I can just take another minute,
sure.
Dan, one thing I do want to address is the Do Not Call registry.
I was going to ask you, because that was sort of an aside there by Trillin, and I was wondering about that.
Right. And it's certainly frustrating because you sign up for the registry and you think, all right, that's it. I'm not going to get any calls. And although that used to be true, the caller is certainly right. That's not true anymore. It doesn't block everything. But I still think it's very valuable. And the way that it's valuable is that it is one tool. If you are registered and you get a call from someone that you don't know, you know that they're breaking the law. This is something, so you can, just know that that call is from someone that you shouldn't trust. If that's what being on the registry gives you, is that little bit of extra information. It may not stop all of the calls, although we know that it does reduce the number of calls that you'll get. It may not stop all of the calls, but it will tell you, all right, I'm on the registry. I shouldn't be getting a call from a stranger. This is someone who's willing to break the law. I'm not going to trust them.
Okay.
John, how long is that good, your number on the registry? I registered in 2008, and like I said, I get lots and lots of calls. It's now 2018. Would it be in my interest to go back and re-register, or does that registration from 2008 still stand?
That registration still stands, and actually there is, believe it or not, a scam that is out there that tries to convince people to re-register and gives them a different phone number and is another
Wonderful.
Way of collecting people's
yes.
information.
I've never heard to, yes. It's amazing the number of scams that perpetuate from legitimate information versus myth. And there's a lot of myths out there that people will fall for because they think they're trying to do the right thing. I do know that the FCC and the Federal Trade Commission and all the phone companies, are both landline and cell, are working together to try to block the number of incoming robocall, spoofing, and smishing calls that are coming into the United States. The problem is, like we were discussing earlier, the sooner you create an app to block those numbers, the sooner they will come up a block to unblock those numbers.
Okay. We've got lots of calls, but we are also getting emails. And I think there's one of them that's interesting. I'm not sure it needs an answer, but just look at the response to this concern today. I mean, we're loaded with emails and calls. One person says, why haven't politicians gotten into regulating this more? Well, this seems to be something that people, grassroots people are really concerned about.
I believe there is legislation in play, is there not, John?
There are a couple of different proposals out there, and the person who emailed in is exactly right. This is something that we all experience and we all feel very strongly about.
Okay, here's another quick question from an email. Christina asks, can telemarketers use your number to spoof other people? Could they use your entire number to spoof other people?
We were discussing that before, and John, you may have a better answer. I don't know the specific answer. Yes, they can. I mean, you can do anything. You can get an app on your phone that makes your phone number look like any phone number you want it to look like.
So
in theory, they can. Now, is it legal? We were discussing that, whether it was identity fraud if someone took your phone number. And as far as we were saying, that's not a personal identifying number like your Social Security number or your date of birth. So at this point, I don't know, John, if you've got a better answer.
No, I would agree with that. Of course, it would be violating the laws against faking your caller ID.
So it's correct. It's against the law again.
Illegal.
All right. Okay. I want to keep going with callers, and I ask callers to be as prompt and direct as possible because we're going to go overtime on this segment. John, you have a question.
Yeah, I was wondering whether just answering the phone by itself will cause these spammers to call you more often or sell your number so that you end up getting more calls. Because I was getting dozens of calls every day, and I've got a phone blocking box that I can block the numbers, and it seems to have slowed down, but I'm still getting three or four a day.
What about that?
The short answer is yes. When you pick up the phone and you say hello or some other some other greeting, you're confirming that number works.
Okay, so you are just asking for trouble, even picking
it
up.
Don't even answer it.
We like to tell people just hang up, but after today, I'm thinking we should tell people just don't answer.
You don't recognize
because the scammers
number.
Aren't going to leave us a voicemail message.
No, they're not.
A legitimate person will leave a voicemail.
A legitimate
message.
Person will leave us a number or a voicemail. Scott, you have a question.
Yeah, I have a landline, and I have an answering machine. And my question is, if my answering machine answers my call, and I don't actually pick up the telephone and answer myself, does that also put me on the list for sellable? Can they sell my number then, or do they consider that a working number?
So I'll jump in on that one, and I think, unfortunately, the answer is yes, but it is still better for you than for you to pick up the phone. In other words, if you think about how much money that information is worth to another scammer, you actually engaging, talking to the person or pressing numbers, that's the thing that they're really looking for. One step down from that would be a person answering the phone. They can say this is a phone number that's actively monitored. And then a step down from that would be, oh, it's just an answering machine. And then, of course, the bottom rung is if it's not answered at all. So there is still some value. You might still end up on list, but yes, it should decrease the numbers if you're not actually answering.
Okay, we have time for one more call. And Thomas, you have a question that I think is probably pretty interesting to everybody. Thomas?
It's not really a question. Yeah, It's not really a question, so I just comment. Last week I received more than a dozen calls, each from a different number, but it was the same message. A robocall saying about how I owed money to the IRS and threats of law enforcement coming for me. Now, of course, I know the IRS would not robocall someone. They would call. I would have an actual person call you. And of course, it's strange because the threats and the fact that they are now posing as government agents. This would make it a federal crime, I would think. And of course, at the end, the joke ended up being on them because my mother works for the Treasury Department, and I immediately reported the numbers.
Smart move,
that's
Thomas.
A really common. The IRS scam is terrible. And the irony of it is that the scam is they want you to go buy Apple iTunes gift cards and call them with the Apple iTunes gift cards numbers. And the IRS is never going to call and ask you to buy gift cards and then call them with the gift card numbers to pay your debt.
Yeah, and they're struggling to find a figure of authority to, again, use that scare tactic to you to take action. My favorite call is that this is somebody from the Apple company calling to get you to buy iTunes cards as part of the scam. And I don't even own an Apple phone.
Yeah. So, well, first off, I want to thank John Miller Steiger, Sandra Guile, and Lori Kramer from the Cincinnati Police Department, Sandra Guile from Better Business Bureau, and John Miller Steiger from the Federal Trade Commission. This has been a great segment. Clearly, this is of great interest to lots of people. Thank you very much. Maybe a final word is don't pick it up.
That's absolutely, if you do
pick it up, hang it up. Just don't talk to them. Don't give them anything. Correct. So thank you very much. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.